It's raining again.
No,
it's
no,
raining again.
No. It can't be.
It's raining again.
Help, it's not me.
It's raining again. 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 It's raining again.
Hi, I'm Maya from The VUD Show, and this is episode 8 of our podcast. I am going to be doing this alone today, and for no particular reason, I just thought I'd kick Adrian out for this particular episode. Maybe because of the theme, which is one of a particular interest of mine, which is about women's experiences in video games, and it's just basically the question as to why I think Project Zero 3, otherwise known as Fatal Frame 3, is the most feminist game ever. Small qualifier, I don't consider myself a feminist, and I'm not saying that as a kind of a fashionable statement. I have lots of reasons as to that, and it would bore the hell out of you if I explained everything. And I think I'm using this as quite a strategic term, not for clickbait reasons, but just as a kind of way of thinking about some of the things that I think is interesting about feminism, because I do find it a useful category of analysis. I think it's interesting, but sometimes I think we need to think more about gender rather than just women's experiences. Anyway, so Project Zero 3 is what I'm going to be referring to it as, because I'm basically in the UK. And so in Project Zero 3, what you have is the third part in a trilogy, although obviously there's more have come out since then. But the reason why I'm focusing on it is because it's the only game that I've played in the series. So I'm hoping that it sort of has all the themes from the previous two. So I'm guessing that it's not going to be too much of a kind of wall it's not going to be too much of an obstacle in my path to talking about it. And basically the plot is simply that the protagonist, Ray, her partner, Yu, is killed in a horrific accident at the beginning of the game. Yeah, I mean, that to start with, I think that's just such an unusual way to start a game. Not totally unheard of. I mean, earlier I was talking to Adrian about how Eternal Darkness had a kind of similar thing. But the fact that a love interest is usually a game will start with some guy, Silent Hill is the kind of thing that I'm thinking of. A guy is kind of motivated by a daughter or a wife or a lover. Her death kind of motivates the protagonist, and so on and so forth. The fact that it's a love interest and it's the other way around, that it's a woman's love interest who dies, I think is very interesting. And what happens is, you know, you wake up in your house and you're walking around. You have your slightly annoying sidekick, Miku, who basically will never stop saying, it's raining again, it's raining again, it's raining again, downstairs. And most of the real-time gameplay happens in the domestic space, in the home. And then you begin having these nightmares, these dreams, which are haunted by this woman who's covered in blue tattoos. And as the game continues, what you spend more and more time in this dream world where all the gameplay essentially happens, and you're attacked by ghosts, most of whom are women, most of whom are women who have had these very strange experiences to do with children, to do with them being young girls who are virgins. I don't want to give too many spoilers away, but I've kind of given a lot away, actually. Who have basically been sacrificed in the name of the whole community, and the tattooed woman is no different. What you discover is that the tattooed woman has been tattooed with the pain and suffering of other people. And basically, what I think the game is very clever at doing is connecting that past, you know, hundreds of years ago, the fact that the women are used in this way, to present day, kind of the sacrifice of women in the present day. So what I mean by that is as the game progresses, Ray, the protagonist, starts to have the tattoos across her body, which you could argue is a way of conveying her grief, could argue it's a way of her kind of showing how her grief over her partner being dead, kind of her kind of the kind of pain of her inside being outside, which is one way of describing why people get tattoos. But I think that another thing that it does is that as the game progresses again, the house itself becomes haunted, and the previously safe domestic space, you walk around, and trust me, as the game goes on, you increasingly just start to wish that the chapter or the section of the game ends so that you can end up in the house. Such a feeling of relief being there. Slowly that kind of process of defamiliarization happens, and you go back and actually there's a ghost under your bloody bed. The face starts to appear and become darker and darker on the walls, and you increasingly find it's actually terrifying to be there. Even the annoying sidekick Miku sort of goes into a coma. She leaves you stranded by yourself. And yeah, I guess that all of those themes, and especially that of virgin sacrifice and ghosts that have their children lost to ritual sacrifice, those kinds of things, I think people, the game developers and the story writers, were really thinking very hard about women's experiences and the role of women perhaps in modern day Japan as much as Japan hundreds of years ago. Yeah, I think that was those are the most of the themes and the kind of the issues that I would kind of argue make it for me a feminist game. And of course, the gameplay aspect of it, the fact that she has a camera, which I think in the first and second game, that's kind of the most iconic fact of it. You don't have a weapon, you don't use brute force. The horror essentially becomes about you being a vulnerable woman. And it is the most terrifying experience. You're walking around an unfamiliar space in the dark. And I think that whether you're a man or a woman or whatever, as you go through the game and you become increasingly aware that your vulnerability has everything to do with your femininity and everything to do with what it is to be a woman in the dark, in a space you don't know, having no gun, having no knife, having no kind of recourse to those kind of weapons. And the things that you're running away from are your own fears, as opposed to what the an actual threat. And I think that speaks very sort of strongly to me personally as a woman. Yeah, it's been quite serious. I don't know. I think I'm going to call Adrian over to discuss what I've just spoken about. Who he's been sitting here quietly this whole time, not interjecting. Thank you, Adrian. Yeah.
Ray, for some reason, I can't sleep either. It's raining again.
Hi, thank you for just listening to my voice for the last 10 minutes or whatever that was. I have Adrian back with me. Hello, welcome to this room. Welcome
Hello.
To this space. Safe for everyone.
It's weird to be introduced and not introduce myself.
I know, I feel slightly power trip here, power trip.
You could take over the hosting in the future. I mean, it doesn't bother me at all.
I can actually see in your face that you're very hurt when you say that. I don't believe that. It's too nerve-wracking. I don't like speaking on my own.
Yeah, but the listeners can't see that my teeth are gritted when I'm saying that.
So anyway, I wanted to know what you thought of. I know that I kind of was pushing to do this for a while. What do you think about Project Zero?
Just listening to you now saying that, it's weird because originally I thought, actually, I don't really have much to say about the game. It's been a long time since we played it.
Yeah.
And I don't really have anything to add. But actually, hearing you actually say it made me think about a lot of aspects of the game that I'd kind of, maybe not forgotten about, but they'd been in the back of my mind. And listening to you kind of brought those things out. So, one of the things that you touched on, but I thought we could talk a bit more about it, is the structure of the game. The fact that it's got kind of episodic thing where don't you go through different... it's about going through a night, isn't it?
Yes.
That's how it's split into nights. And it's kind of strange how that works, but there are... Basically, because it's all... She's cursed, and when she falls asleep in her home, which, as you said, it's a bit confusing, isn't it? Because there's her home, which is the safe place, and then she falls asleep, and then she's in the manor of sleep, which is the haunted place, which is also a house, but just a bloody massive house, and kind of feudal Japan and black and white and all that kind of stuff. But at certain point she wakes up, doesn't she? And then sometimes when she wakes up, is it the middle of the night? and then after you, and you wake up at set points, like when you get into, I don't know, you basically find, come across a cutscene or some event that makes, forces you to wake up. So you tend to go through several phases, don't you, before the night is over and it goes to the next day. But it's kind of, I always find it a kind of a relief when you go on to the next day.
Yes, definitely. Although I think that relief just dissipates.
Yeah, that's the other thing actually that you kind of reminded me of, is the way that the her house, that, as you said, starts off as a really safe place. It does the same thing, I know you mentioned it, but like with Eternal Darkness, with the house, because Eternal Darkness is also set in a house, but you're going back in time and doing all this stuff, but you always return to the house, and the house starts off as a safe place, no zombies, no monsters, nothing scary, but it's a little bit creepy, but then later it becomes more and more creepy.
I think it does that, a thing that lots of people have spoken about way better than me, but it's just that thing about the gothic and fear and the frightening being very much about women's repression, like sexual repression, and I mean that's where gothic, some people argue gothic came from, where it was a bunch of women who just had way too many feelings and just couldn't sort of go there, so they would say, oh, this kind of terrifying thing happened to me, which you could argue was their, you know, there's something innate within themselves. And I think that's kind of how I read the game on some level. So you're talking about it kind of going from night to day, you know, in a sense it's about her grief as well as Miku's grief, and also the third character, the guy, what's his name, Ken or whatever, Kai. Oh, yeah. I think Kai,
yeah,
and it's about their mourning and their journey as well. But I feel like it's so much about, like, the girls. It really is, like, the very fact that the set pieces themselves are all, like, for example one of the most memorable places for me is the kimono room. You go in the kimono room and this woman is just, you can't see her face, but she's just brushing her hair in like on one side.
It's the rink.
It's that scene
from the rink.
Yeah, and then she just turns around there's something about how frightening it is being attacked by, mostly, I think it's like something like 70% of the ghosts in the game are women, not men. And the male ghosts are less, it is scary for some reason, but being attacked by women ghosts, I find quite, I don't know, something about that is very...
Hmm. Yeah. You know, one of the things that I really, that again, listening to you talk reminded me, and I hadn't really thought about it, but you mentioned like the kind of... I don't know what you might call, like, the set piece ghosts. Like you said now with the kimono room, and then also there's the kind of the virgins. I know this is a little bit... You mentioned the virgins in passing.
Yes, the ritual with the virgins.
But the virgins, the fact that you have to fight the virgins with... Mm. Well, you have... Sorry.
I love that.
You've got to photograph the virgins.
You've got to exercise their souls. Let's put it that way. You don't have to fight them. Yeah. You've got to set them free.
There you go. Through violence. Through flash photography. You know, it's does that thing that I don't know of many other horror games that do it. You know, most horror games, Silent Hill, Resident Evil, they're kind of the classics, have, you know, very generic enemies that you fight the majority of the time, and then you have the bosses, and they're a totally separate thing. But Project Zero, I feel like, is much more organic in the way that it's like every enemy is like a boss, and there are no bosses because of that, because every enemy is unique. Maybe not totally unique. You do come across a few types, but I feel like it's a lot less, you know, leveraged on that distinction between a generic enemy and this is a boss.
The thing that lends it so much depth is the fact that you, your old boyfriend, Ray's boyfriend, and Kai as well, who was a good friend with him, have these research notes which you find throughout the game, which gives a backstory as to why you fought this particular ghost, and explains the rituals involved and the folklore involved, and what it does is that it makes, I just feel like there's this profound connection between then and now, and the dream world and the real world, and that the fact that that line increasingly blurs, so in a sense it becomes more and more difficult to really say whether you're doing a good thing by t- getting rid of these, I don't know, I feel like it's so much to do with her memories and the mourning she's going through and her experiences. And then, but at the same time, those ghosts went through the same experiences of loss for their community and for what they would do. Do you see what I mean? Mm. There's some kind of back and forth there, that blurred line.
Yeah, I think it's kind of a, imagine if every enemy in Resident Evil was, is her name Lisa?
Maybe.
Do you remember that it got from that house with the trap door, the cabin in the woods? Remember the trap door?
Mm.
You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, I know what you're talking about.
Okay, I think she's vaguely in the original game, but in the remake, she plays a really big part.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's kind of like, imagine every enemy was her in Resident Evil. And Resident Evil was less about dealing with, you know, I've got to survive, you know, we're trapped in this house, oh my God, there's zombies. If it was less like that, and it was more of that, had that mystery element.
It's more about being trapped within your own body, exactly. Trapped within your own experiences. That's kind of what I'm trying to say. Thank you, you've given me that. It's not just about being trapped within a house, but it's about being what it's like to be trapped. And I think it's specifically trapped as a woman within the domestic space and within, like, what it's like when you lose someone and having that. And although, of course, Kaya has also lost someone, I still think that it's very much about that. And I think that the what's so terrifying...
Well, he's quite in the background.
He's very in the background. He's
not. I mean, Ray and Miku, they actually live together and they have conversations. The other... Kai. I mean, you're just sending letters to him, basically receiving letters from him. And you pick it up secondhand.
You do play as him, but I just don't think he plays as big a role. And
it's not in the story, not at all.
No, really. And I think his role is more primarily as the kind of intellectual researcher. He's kind of like the kind of you who's not there at the moment, if that makes sense. He kind of provides research notes and stuff like that. I'm glad I got this off my chest because it's been bugging me for ages. I think that's pretty much everything I wanted to say, Adrian. Any final thoughts?
I mean, if you haven't played it, it is a really excellent game.
It is the best horror game. I mean, I really wouldn't recommend playing it on your own because you will not be able to progress. It is that frightening. It's absolutely terrifying.
I mean, my thoughts on the game itself, the kind of the gameplay side, which I think is, for the most part, very strong. In some ways, I would say maybe Silent Hill is a little bit... Maybe I would just give it the edge in terms of recommendation. You know, Silent Hill 2, maybe, but I don't know.
They're very different.
They're very different,
they're
exactly.
They're
very,
very
different.
But
yeah. Both of them, I'd say, are essential. I mean, we're horror fans, right? So
another game I would definitely not recommend playing, but we have discussed it before, is D.
Oh yeah, D.
And I think that D is quite D is quite interesting because it's a bad game in many respects, but it tries to do a similar thing. But I think Project Zero, obviously, because of the time it was made and all that, has a lot more technology behind it to make those themes manifest. And
oh God!
I just think if you're interested if you're interested in JRPGs, even there could be all kinds of people that would be interested. But I think if you like being scared, and you, it is the most frightening experience I've ever had via any medium.
Yeah, yeah. Look, I mean, D is just totally a product of the 90s. Totally.
Okay. Don't get sidetracked.
Irredeemably. Okay. It's irredeemably 90s. Okay. Project Zero is a
timeless classic.
I don't know about it. It is a very... It is, in terms of kind of the gameplay, mechanics-wise and all that stuff, it is kind of top-end, top-ish NPS2. That should tell you it is very accessible.
For a moment, I thought you were going to say top shelf, and I was like, are you just referring to the boob physic quote that has been going around?
No, well, yeah, I know some whatever new the new Fatal Frame, new projects, everything. But you didn't mention the shower scene.
Of course,
things getting a little bit sexy.
Yeah, no, I wow. That is the one thing that I would say is a bit like, oh, come on, guys, you know, why? There is a shower scene at the beginning of the game.
Yeah,
don't be disgusting, Adrian. Adrian. No. Just no.
So am I ruining your podcast?
Yeah, like I'm trying to be all serious and you're just ruining it with your monkey noises. Anyway,
No, but seriously, there is a shower scene, and I'm not saying it's like that. I mean, whatever. I don't think shower scenes are even that. I don't know. I don't really think of them as kind of. I think that's just fan service, and I don't really care.
Yeah, definitely.
It's almost kind of compulsory to have a shower scene.
Yeah. Okay. All right, mate. Well, let's wrap it up, shall we? Can we give one final thought, maybe, or?
No, all my thoughts have gone now. Thank you.
Okay. Okay, well, in that case, let me give a final thought, not on the game, but on your discussion of the game.
Because I need to be evaluated by a man. Go on.
I just think that listening to you talk about it, that you're sort of picking up on themes that I only really vaguely picked up on when we originally played it.
It's because my intellect far surpasses your own.
Don't make me bring out the monkey noises again. Anyway... I was saying, the point is, oh God, what is the point? What's the point of it all? Oh yeah. Okay. No, it reminds me then that, like you talking about it, it makes me think that Project Zero is actually a lot better, the story wise, than I gave it credit for in the first place.
Yeah.
I really enjoyed it, but I think
it's too terrifying to actually appreciate what a good story is.
Yeah, maybe. But I think it's part, you know, on one level you could look at it as a kind of got that ring, the whole ring thing going on, and you can just take it. I just took it at face value on that level of, oh, it's just a ring ripoff. It's got investigative journalism. It's got kind of, you know, old school ritual sacrifice, the best kind of ritual sacrifice.
But all scary games have an element of the you know, borrowing from film. And
I know,
Ring itself, it has very interesting gender politics going on. But I feel like Project Zero pushes it like about, you know, times 10, you know, pushes it times 10.
Okay. Yeah, that's true. But you know, I kind of feel like
it's final thought is just taking forever.
Yeah, because I'm not being allowed to explain it. I feel like it's just you're revealing there's layers to the story there that, as I said, you might not pick up on. And in that sense, it's like it does what a good narrative should do, or, you know, a good kind of film, or, you know, more sort of narrative heavy form than a video game usually would, you know, which is that has these extra layers of depth beneath the kind of very kind of generic... Not entirely, as you're saying, but, you know, it's a kind of generic kind of surface about, oh, mythology and, oh, you know, all this kind of stuff. But, yes.
It's deep.
Peel that back and then you end up with quite interesting stuff. So I think that's really cool. And thank you for spelling it out to numpties like me so you can feel smart.
That's okay.
Feel
anytime.
Smart as I play Project Zero.
Anytime.
Okay, well, May, since you're the host...
Okay, do you want to say goodbye, Adrian?
Is that it? No more ambling? Or?
No, that's it. Goodbye.
All right. See you next time.
Hi, I'm May from the UG show. I have murdered Adrian in a rage, and therefore... No, Adrian, get out of the room. Adrian, that's all. You didn't need to do that. Now I have to start all over again.
No, you don't.
Yeah, I do.
Why?
Because you shocked me, and you took me out of the... I don't even know what I'm going to say next. Okay, I'm going to start again. Why are you even interrupting? You're not even meant to be here. Hi, I'm Maya from... okay, sorry. See, thanks, Adrian. It's just such a dickhead. Hi. So you made me so nervous. I was okay. And then you screaming like that really like has put me on edge. Anyway.
Scared.
Because it came out of nowhere, that's why. Anyway.